Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that is teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Ron Higgs. He's a fractional COO and veteran of the U.S. Navy. Whenever people step out on their own and start their own businesses, I'm really interested to speak to them. And I'm also interested to learn how being in the military helped in preparing him for the work that he does now. And of course, because this podcast is all about public speaking, we'll get into that too. So welcome to Teach the Geek interviews, Ron.
Thank you for having me, Neil. I really appreciate it.
From the bit of research I did on you, I saw that you got a degree in math. What was the motivation to get that degree?
When I showed up at the Naval Academy, the first year at the Naval Academy, everybody kind of takes the same thing, all the same courses, but they do allow you to do some testing in the beginning to validate courses. And as it turned out, I validated through testing 3 semesters of math. So I got put in a second semester math class, as a freshman, as a plebe. And during that year, math is a background for everything, engineering. So, in the Naval Academy, we had to take physics, we had to take chemistry, we had to take, it's very technical, no matter what you get the degree in, history, anything soft, you still have to have a technical background. So everybody gets a BS. And I went and it's like, hey, this math stuff, it's really coming to me easy. And I actually really like it. So I just decided to major in applied mathematics, knowing that later in life, I'd get an engineering degree and the understanding of the math would help me.
Yeah, I did see that you got a master's in systems engineering. So I'm curious, what is systems engineering and what made you decide to get a master's in it?
Well, systems engineering is not what you think of computer systems, but it's the interdisciplinary. So it's looking at a whole bunch. If you're building an aircraft carrier, you have to coordinate the efforts of all different kinds of engineers, naval architects, aerospace engineers, mechanical engineers. So the education was based on learning all of those different engineering disciplines and some program management techniques as well, so that the systems engineer is the common person that helps speak common language between all the engineering disciplines.
I went to a conference last month and it was put on by a systems engineering organization called INCOSI. They have a yep. chapter here in San Diego. They had their I guess they call it a mini conference. And I went because I was really interested to learn more about systems engineering and what it is. And do you know that by the end of it, I still wasn't really all that sure about what systems engineering was?
Yeah, I can believe that. I went to the Naval Postgraduate School for that degree, and it's actually one of the leading places for that kind of degree. But I sat in electrical engineering classes, mechanical engineering classes, physics classes, everything, so that I could learn just enough about every engineering discipline to be able to speak, like I said, all the different languages. And so system is thinking of anything as an entire system from the time you build it to the time that you retire it. So thinking in terms of the people who are going to build it, the people who are going to use it, the people who are going to maintain it, people who are going to dismantle it at the end, and even, the people who are going to transport it from its, from its build location to the other. So it really involves thinking on everything on a systems level. And I chose that because I was a systems thinker before I knew what it was. And I also have a degree in aerospace engineering, which isn't apparent there, but I went to the U.S. Naval Test Pilot School and we all ended up with degrees in engineering flight test.
Wow, that's a lot of degrees. that's impressive. Yeah. So now you graduate from the U.S. Naval Academy. What was next for Ron Higgs?
I went to the Naval Academy with the intent of flying airplanes off of aircraft carriers and becoming an astronaut. So when I graduated, I went right to flight school and put myself on the path to become an astronaut. So I served in a couple of different squadrons in the Navy. I ended up applying and being accepted to U.S. Naval Test Pilot School. So I became a test pilot, and then I ended up circling back to the test pilot school as a flight instructor. So I taught other Navy pilots how to be test pilots, and I ended up being screened for NASA. In Navy, you have to apply to the Navy first. You apply to NASA, and then the Navy screens people and decides who they're going to send as candidates to NASA. And I was one of the candidates that the Navy sent to NASA. Unfortunately, when I got to NASA, I was disqualified for a medical reason, but I sort of got as close to my dream as I could.
Oh man, that sucks. So now you realize you're not going to be able to be an astronaut for medical reasons. What'd you do then?
Well, you know, I stayed in the Navy. I made a career out of the Navy, and I'm an avid learner. So I learned as much as I could. The Navy has a place called, or the military has a place called the Defense Acquisition University. So I got involved in program management and acquisition. And through the Navy, I learned, Lean, Six Sigma. I got qualified in, I went to this Defense Acquisition University to get certifications in production and manufacturing, systems engineering, flight testing, all sorts of different things. So if somebody was going to send me to a school, I was going to go. And then that's when I ended up going to the postgraduate school and I actually started off in an aerospace engineering program and switched to systems engineering because I liked the interdisciplinary nature of it.
So did you stay working, stay in the military before, once you started your, was there a working in corporate between you leaving the military and starting your own business, or was it straight from the military to starting your own business?
Oh, no, there was a long time before I started my own business. So once I got involved in program management and acquisition in the Navy, I became a technical program manager. So that's managing technical programs that have to do with naval aviation and one satellite program. So I was actually a spacecraft manager for a satellite program. And I gave, I was on the launch team, and I gave the final spacecraft go before we launched our satellite into space. So I retired from the Navy, and then I did a couple of different things. I worked as a senior systems engineer for a consulting company. I worked in sales and business development for a defense contractor, again, selling and doing technical things. Then I went to Boeing. I did flight tests for Boeing, which is essentially flying airplanes on their first flight out of the factory. I left that job, and then I was in charge of delivering all the military aircraft, or all the aircraft to the Navy being built here in the Pacific Northwest. Lot of people, a lot of moving parts. Got promoted again at Boeing and decided that it was time to do something else. I'd spent my entire life pretty much in aerospace in defense, and just had another calling. So I decided to get out, start my own business, and become a consultant.
Okay. So I'm kind of curious. I mean, I mentioned in the intro that you're a fractional COO, which I suspect means that you take on that role for various companies simultaneously. So what was the motivation for you doing that as opposed to being a COO at just one place?
Well, just like a lot of people were maybe forced into it. So I ended up getting a job as a COO of a small company, and it was pure luck and networking, just through some networking, talking to people. Somebody said, "Hey, I know this guy is looking for a COO and you would be a great COO." I go, "Okay." And I ended up interviewing with him, and he hired me. And that was in January of 2020, right? And in April 1st of 2020, I got laid off due to COVID. So I had the job for a very short period of time, but I found what I was good at. So because I used my background in systems engineering, right, thinking as a whole, systems thinking, and applied that to a business, right? So I learned about all the different operating functions of the business and how they all work together to move the business forward, right? So my education in systems engineering is actually what helped me the most as a COO. The second thing was EQ. I've been blessed with a fairly high EQ, I do know, how to work with people and a lot about people. And being a COO has, you're dealing with a lot of people problems. But that getting laid off, I went, you know what? I think this is really what I want to do. So I stepped back during COVID and rebranded myself as a fractional COO.
Got it. So, as a fractional COO, what type of work do you do?
So I go in and help really busy CEOs work more on their business instead of in their business. And what that means is sometimes companies, you have one person running the company that's essentially doing everything. And I focus on smaller companies, not super large companies. And the CEO is overwhelmed, busy, and there's maybe needs some help, but doesn't really need someone full time, or maybe can't afford full-time help. So I go in and help them on a part-time basis run the company. The other thing I do is sort of coaching. So in other words, sometimes people at the top of companies try to take on everything themselves. And I work with them on trying to let some things go, pushing decision-making down to the lowest level, empowering people, and really not having their, fingers in every decision that's being made in the company.
Do you think it's possible to be a fractional CEO?
Yeah, I think it depends on the size of the business. And I will tell you, I think there's some companies out there that think they probably have the amount of time that the CEO spends in the office. They may indeed be fractional, right? But you got to be dedicated. Somebody's got to come in and run the day-to-day. But the CEO is really the one that's out there thinking strategically, leading the vision and things like that. So again, fractional CEO, I don't know, but there are fractional professionals at every level. As a matter of fact, I'm a part of a group, a couple of different groups of fractional professionals, where we have fractional COOs, fractional CFOs, fractional chief marketing officers, fractional chief HROs, those types of, and we all help each other.
Eventually, it gets to a point, and you mentioned that you go into companies where perhaps they can't afford to bring on a full-time COO, or maybe they don't have enough work to really have a full-time COO. So in the case of the latter, where they may not have enough work, but eventually the company grows to the point where they do, and they really need someone that's full-time. Are you the person that says, I'll take it on, or no, I'm staying fractional and I can find you somebody that could take on the full-time COO role?
As a fractional, my job, I look at my job is to work myself out of a job, however that is, right? So what that means is working myself out of a job by helping the company grow to the point where they do need a full-time COO. And I can help with the recruiting, the interviewing, the recommendation, even the recommendation for hire, and even up to and including training and turning over with that person. There's also an element of leveling someone else up. So in other words, there may be somebody in the company that's a good candidate, but not quite ready, right? So I can coach and work with that person to level them up into the job, but always my goal is to work myself out of a job.
Okay. Have you ever ran into an instance where perhaps you and the CEO don't agree on what a fractional COO actually does? And if so, how do you deal with that situation?
Well, it's all about setting expectations up front and sort of being firm in what I'm there to do. And so getting into sort of the day-to-day things and the messes, that's not necessarily what I'm there for. But I do work, every engagement is unique. So you have a lot of CEOs that says, man, I wish I had more time to go to these Chamber of Commerce meetings. Well, I tell you what, I'll do whatever it is you were doing, and you can go to a Chamber of Commerce meeting. And then there's others that go, I hate those meetings, but we need some representation there. I'm like, okay, I'll go and represent the company. Right. So it's all about working with somebody and keeping them in their zone of genius. And you have to figure out what their zone of genius is. And there's a little bit of coaching as far as, hey, is that the best use of your time? So trying to make sure and be firm with those folks about, hey, is this the best use of your time? This is one of those things where, you're doing that yourself, but you could probably pay somebody $20 an hour to do it. And if your time is worth about $500 an hour and you spend 2 hours doing it, you just spent $1,000, right? And somebody who's an expert at that at $20 an hour could have it done in half an hour.
Well, that's smart that they bring on someone like you to remind them of that, because I think a lot of times, especially with people who are CEOs maybe for the first time, they may have, as you mentioned, they may have difficulty letting go of certain things. But if you break it down kind of like that, like this, there's You can spend as much time doing things as you want, but there's a cost to that. And are you willing to pay that cost for something that potentially could have been done for a lesser cost by somebody else? And when you, I think when you explain it that way, people are way more likely to think, yeah, maybe I should be focused on more high level stuff, and all this other lower level things I can get somebody that we don't have to pay as much to do it. So that's,
yeah,
that's,
absolutely. That's, it's all about people trying to keep people in their zone of genius. And most CEOs are visionaries. You know, visionaries are the type of people that have the big ideas to start the companies, right? And visionaries need others, right? The people who are good, who are task driven, who are data driven, who think in terms of, visionaries tend to think at a 30,000 foot level, right? So visionaries need the help of people who think sort of on the ground level, and other people who think sort of beneath the ground level, right? With the data and things like that. And so it's a combination of all those kind of different types of people that you need to move the company forward.
Absolutely. You know, Ron, when I first started this podcast, it was to learn the public speaking journeys of people. And from speaking to you up until this point, it made me think about how important it would be for a CEO to be able to communicate what they or he or she needs from a fractional CEO like yourself, from the perhaps other fractional employees they have, or even full-time or part-time employees that they have. It's really important to manage those expectations, as you mentioned. So when did you realize that getting better at speaking or just communicating with others could be a benefit to you?
Well, I mean, it started in the Navy, really. I mean, because I was 17 years old, I'm thrust into leadership positions at the Naval Academy, right? And through my entire journey in the Navy, right, when you see Navy pilots out there in movies, right, as a Navy pilot or as a naval aviator in a squadron, you actually have a job. And that job is leading people, leading a division, leading a group of some kind, right? And the flying is only a small part of your job, right? And so then in order to communicate, or in order to lead people, I think you have to be a good communicator. You have to learn how to communicate. And some of us learn better than others, right? Some of us learn from good examples that we see, you know, above us. And some of us learn from really bad examples that we see, you know, above us, meaning, wow, that person was the worst leader ever. I'm never going to do that, right? And that, by default, you sort of become better. And in the military, as you move up and gain more responsibility, right, you end up being in charge of larger groups of people. So you have to stand in front of them at some point and communicate. And I was sort of thrust into this, you know, at a young age, but during my time in the military, I had to get comfortable with speaking. And then I became the commander of a facility. And when I was the commander of this facility, it was sort of co-located with a bunch of defense contractors. So I represented the entire Navy to these group of defense contractors. So I had to be very intentional about what I said, what I did, and everything else, in addition to leading the group of about, you know, 50 people that are part of the facility.
Is presenting or just speaking in front of others, is that something you've always been good at? And if not, what did you do to get better at it?
No, I have not always been good at it. It was one of those things, I think I can't remember who said this, but it was the number one fear in the world or something is death. And the number two is public speaking. I don't know whether that's true or not, but a lot of people are fear it. And I did too, to some point. But one thing, again, that made me get over it was during my time in the Navy, I was a part of a satellite program, as I mentioned. And this satellite program, we had over 100 vendors that provided parts to our system. And somebody approached me and said, hey, we have a vendor that's having a little trouble meeting their quotas, meeting their manufacturing responsibilities. And so things are coming late, which pushes our schedule back. It's like, would you be willing to go to the vendor and talk to them? And they're like, yeah, it's a group of 30 or 40 people or something. Just stand up and give them some kind of motivational speech. I went, okay. So flew out to the vendor site in San Jose, California, got there. There were 300 people on the manufacturing floor. So you know, I hesitated and I went, okay, so how do I motivate these people? And I stood and I read their mission statement. They had their company mission statement painted on the wall in the front of the building. And it was a short one. So I memorized it and I went up and I talked to them about, I go, okay. And I repeated their mission statement to them and they were kind of surprised by that. But then I told them, yeah, how can I connect with these people? How can I get them? How can I give them a story? So I just told them about the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines that were out there depending on them, right? It was all military satellite systems are classified. So I couldn't tell them anything about it. All they knew is they were working on a satellite, right? So I says, hey, the parts that you provide for satellite, even though they're small parts, the satellite can't work without it. And that satellite is up there to help us bring back more people than we send, right? Because this is the military, right? And if we go into any conflict, some people aren't going to come back, right? And so if you know anybody in the military, right, think about them, right? And this satellite gives us the advantage so that more of those people are going to come back. And don't think of them as, you know, think of these people are your fathers, sons, mothers, daughters, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends, you know, not just nameless, you know, soldiers, military people, right? So if you help us do that, and that ended up going over really well. And then it ended up going over so well that they asked me to go to several more vendors to give the same speech. So I actually got a chance to continually refine it. And actually give a presentation. We had a yearly conference of hundreds of people. And I got to stand up at that conference and give that pitch to those people. So that's what really sort of started my journey into speaking in front of large groups of people.
Well, I'm glad it all worked out. It certainly sounded like it worked out because they sent you out there in front of other people. Or they could have just thought, well, this is the best we could do. Anyone else didn't do a good job.
Well, you know how you always think. I think we're all our own worst critics.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, man, people will come up, Ron, that was great. That was awesome. I'm thinking to myself, really?
Yeah, it just works out that way sometimes.
And you get better every time. You learn something from it every time.
Right? 100%. Practice makes progress. Do you ever get nervous giving presentations before them? And if so, how do you deal with your nerves?
You know, absolutely. I think everybody does. And it's nervous beforehand. But, you know, time doesn't stop. At some point, Ron, you're on. And take a deep breath and just hit it. And then all that goes away. And it's hard to believe. And you've probably been there where it's like you're so nervous in the beginning. And once you get started and you know what you're doing and things flow, it really ends up going well. And even if you flub a couple of things, it turns out that nothing really matters. Because again, you're your own worst critic, right? And you're like, oh man, I stumbled over my words. Okay. Right. But people still at the end didn't come over. It's like, hey, you stumbled over a couple of words. What's going on? Right? I mean, I think at the end, when people come away inspired, that was the thing. It's like, how am I going to inspire these people? I want these people to walk away inspired. How do I do that? Right. And I think that all goes away.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And in the event that someone were to come up to you and say you stumbled over a couple of words, well, I think you should make sure that you're in the front row when they have to go present, and you've been looking around, you've been waiting to see what they stumble.
Of course I did. It's like, you know, it's like, of course I stumbled. So luckily I only stumbled over those couple of words and not through the whole thing. So I'm getting better.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to nerves, Ron, I really believe that if you're not nervous before a presentation or you have those butterflies in your stomach, it's probably because you don't care about what you're talking about anyway. I mean, you mentioned that you really want people to be inspired leaving your presentations. And the fact that you were nervous is a sign of the fact that you really wanted people to take that away from your presentations. If you didn't care that they were going to be inspired, you probably wouldn't be nervous about giving your presentation either.
Neil, I agree with you 100%, right? And one of those things, and this is a little bit related, but I used to have a motorcycle. Actually, I still have a motorcycle, but I used to have a sport bike. And I said to myself, the minute that this thing doesn't scare me is when I have to get rid of it. Right. And so I got to the point one time I did something and I wasn't scared. And I'm like, okay, that's it. I got to get rid of this stuff. Right. And so again, you know, you're right. I should be a little bit nervous in front of it because I want to do, we all want to do a good job. Right. And you think that you have it wired in terms of leadership. Right. I've met people that says, I know everything there is to know about leadership. They're like, are you kidding me? Right. I went to the Naval Academy. I started when I was 17. You know what I mean? And up until this day, I still have much more to learn about leadership, right? So you have to be, so if you think you have it wired, then man, you know, maybe you don't care anymore.
Yeah, or you're in for a rude awakening when someone tells you you don't have it wired.
Yeah, exactly. So
when it comes to giving presentations, just speaking in front of people in general, what's your number one tip that you would give to people who are listening to this conversation on how they can become more effective at doing it?
I'm going to go back to using that word inspired, right? Am I, when I'm done, are these people going to be inspired to do something? Whatever it is, open a book, do something better, do some research, try to learn something, whatever it is, right? Are they going to be inspired? That's really, ask yourself that. And if you can answer yes, then I think you will have done well.
Man, I can recall a number of conferences that I used to go to back when I worked as an engineer. And if people would have taken, and the people at least that were giving the presentations, if they had taken that into account, whether the audience was inspired, maybe I wouldn't have fallen asleep through as many of those conference talks. hardly inspiring, to say the least, Ron. I'm telling you, you'd be in the audience and they'd be reading the slides. They're not looking at people. There's a whole bunch of text on the slides and they just, you know, reading through it in this monotone voice, is trying to get through it, I guess, as quickly as possible, hoping that they don't get any questions. And then I just be just thinking, man, well, why am I here? It's a good thing that I have to pay to be here. The company paying for me to be here. The money had to come out of my pocket, then I gotta talk to somebody.
Well, the challenge with us technical people, I think the biggest challenge is to break down complex things and explain them simply to everyone, right? That's really difficult. It really is. And if you can do that, I think you'll be successful. So if you're reading slides or if something's really, really long and complicated, then you're probably not breaking it down to a simple enough level.
Absolutely. This has been a great conversation, Ron. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn looking for more, always looking to connect with folks, to share networks, to share experiences, hoping I can learn from things that you're posting. Hopefully you can learn from me. So Ron Higgs on LinkedIn. I also have www.wolfmanagementsolutions.com, which is my company website. But that, you know, you'll probably learn just as much on LinkedIn as you will on my company website. So
excellent. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek. You can learn more about Teach the Geek at teachthegeek.com. Again, that is teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms. We're on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.